All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, May 8th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewel here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday. We made it. It's always a happy day for me. I mean, even though we're on the hamster wheel every day, at least Friday is something to look forward to. Every day is just the same. It is 75 degrees here right now in upstate New York with a few puffy clouds. So it's pretty nice. We are supposed to be up in the 80s this weekend. So I think I'm going to go out and have some fun. Yeah, lots of gardening. They have now said, I saw Pigmine uploaded a video this morning saying that we are under a pollen tsunami. And it really made me laugh because all of the trees within the last 24 hours up here went poof, and they have leaves and flowers. So for any of us that are allergy sufferers, I know last night I probably had 32 tissues lined up across the headboard. I feel all right now, but I've opened the door, so by the end of the show, I'm sure I'll be sniffling. All right, so yesterday, we took a good look at a bunch of different things. It doesn't look like I actually posted the show. Like, how dumb is that? I always forget to do that, post the show on the show page. But we had talked about the microbiome, mad science in your food, and the brain-gut axis. I kind of picked on Nestle Foods a little bit, but only because they were offering that webinar that then they canceled due to, quote, unforeseen circumstances, or actually they postponed it until June 23rd. But one of the things that caught my attention about that webinar was that Nestle had their scientists, it was like Nestle Labs or Nestle Research, and they were going to be giving a webinar on utilizing the microbiome to make your food more nutritious. And they were going to be able to manipulate your health, I guess would be a good way to put it, by the substances they put into your food. And I guess what gets me about all of this coming precision, you know, we have precision healthcare that's going to be based on your genome and we can cure your ills at an individual level. We actually heard a video clip yesterday about the 3D printer out of Israel that's going to be able to 3D print food specifically for your microbiome. I think it's the same sort of technologies that Nestle is talking about, where once they have determined your makeup and what they consider is normal versus abnormal, they then will be able to adjust your microbiome by what they put into your food. But the scary part about that is, and actually I want to go hit, because I had a bunch of links in the description of the show we did yesterday. Yeah, let's go down here. One of the things that gets me about this is that we talked about some of the research that was done between your dog and having a dog and sharing microbiota with your dog. They have shown that now. They also have shown that your mental health may actually be dependent upon some of the microbiota in your gut. I also, after the show yesterday, we had talked about fecal transplants. And when we first had started reading about how mingling microbiome can actually change somebody's personality, I had kind of postulated and laughed about that. I wonder if the fecal transplant would make somebody change personality. But there was a story that actually came out yesterday. First time ever, woman becomes obese after fecal transplantation from overweight donor. So, you know, the thing is that we're finding more and more now, as they're really delving into what the microbiome is and how this entire ecosystem affects our body. And of course, you know, your gut, we read a whole story yesterday, and I actually listed three or four of them, about how your gut is actually a second brain. You have all these nerve connections. The main nerve is the vagus nerve that connects to your brain, and it actually thinks independently of the brain in your head. So as we start understanding all of these different connections, how disturbing is it that a large global food corporation, especially the same one where the CEO comes out and says that, having access to water is not a human right and it should be privatized, is making decisions about what's going to go into your body through their food and how it's going to make you healthy. Think about this. They could very easily isolate, and they're already working on this, not Nestle in general, or not Nestle, but in general. They're already working on discovering how gut flora affects your mental health. So think about this. I mean, if they actually found the combination that took a combative person, let's say, to turn them into a docile person, or, you know, I mean, they can manipulate us in any way that they want. I mentioned yesterday, too, that story out of, I think it was the Romania, with that scientist who had discovered the connection between cats and toxoplasmas and the evolutionary symbiosis between cats, toxoplasmas, and people becoming infected who own cats with toxoplasmas, and how it makes them more agreeable to the cat. They almost become the cat's slave. I mean, you better believe, even if it's not out there in the headlines, I am going to make a wild guess, and I would probably, if I had some cash, I'd gamble on this one. The DARPA is probably throwing a whole shit ton of money behind it as kind of an ancillary sidebar to the Brain Project, don't you think? I would think so. All right, so what I want to continue on today, so I think we've dug enough into the microbiota for the time being, but I want to still stay on food and some of the poisons that are out there. This one actually caught my attention after the show yesterday, and I was not aware of this. This came out of Discover Magazine. Arsenic in food could threaten our health, but it is not being regulated. Now, when we've looked at the failures across the board between the FDA, the USDA, Tom Vilsack, his in-bed relationship with biotech and big pharma, and then you have Michael Taylor at the FDA, who's been in the revolving door multiple times, different jobs within the FDA and different jobs within Monsanto, and then you look at how we discovered that there's been all kinds of research published that has not been properly peer-reviewed or has been published and then found to be fraudulent after the fact and not redacted, you know, you come to the conclusion that there is really nobody that is watching the hen house, and it is full of a gaggle of foxes. They're all digging under the fence and they're nibbling your chicken's toes. You know, the thing that's so upsetting about this is when you get people like Dr. Huber, who spent 50 years in all kinds of different positions, but mainly dealing with agricultural and veterinary medicine, and he starts talking about how the most widely used herbicide out there that, of course, is Monsanto's, and it's everywhere, glyphosate, is causing chelation of nutrients coming out of our bodies and preventing proper absorption and causing all these different diseases in animals, killing all your proper gut bacteria, not only in animals, humans, bees, but in the soils as well. And then we see this corruption across the board and poisons everywhere. It really makes you wonder, how did this possibly happen? And then at the very end of the show, of course, we took a look at the new mental disease that, oh, thank God it hasn't quite made it into DSM-5. But all those crazy people that come with their organic food to the family barbecue talking about how they have to eat healthy and all the poisons in their food, and they must be crazy. You know, they're painting us out to be lunatics because it's not on the 5 o'clock news that your food is poisoned or that the regulatory agencies that are watching, supposed to be watching our food, are corrupt. So anyway, yes, we have arsenic in our food. Nobody's testing for it or it's being regulated. Let's read about this. Researchers have known for some time, and I remember too when I started looking into arsenic way back, apple juice apparently is a real big one. Researchers have known for some time that food and drink we all consume contains arsenic, but should we be concerned? Aren't we protected by federal regulations? Well, surprise, actually, no, we are not. In the U.S., as in many countries, the government regulates the concentration of arsenic in drinking water, but does not regulate the concentration of arsenic in any other drink or food. We have a mercury in food regulation. Why don't we have an arsenic in food regulation? Well, good question. One important difference is that all of the compounds of mercury we find in food are equally toxic. Wasn't that interesting that they're still sticking in vaccines? But all types, all compounds. And wasn't there a video that came out when the whole anti-vaxxer thing started up again? Where, I'm trying to remember who it was. It was a senator, I believe, whose grandson had ended up vaccine damaged. And he came out and started arguing. We played it on the show. He came out and started arguing about mercury. And I think it was Anderson Cooper who, like, went head to head with him and argued about one type of methylmercury versus another, and well, one isn't dangerous. Bullshit, Anderson Cooper. It says one important difference is that all of the compounds of mercury we find in food are equally toxic. Thank you, Discover Magazine. It is not the case for arsenic. Although we normally think of arsenic compounds as potentially harmful, most of the arsenic we eat is harmless, while few. Seafood, which can, by far contains the highest concentrations of arsenic, delivers it as an arsenobetadine, an organic chemical containing arsenic that is innocuous to humans. How then should arsenic in food be regulated? To do that well, we need to develop better ways to determine the amounts of arsenic and other chemicals in our food. Well, wasn't that a spectrometer? I don't know. I thought that's what allowed you to look at foods and determine what chemicals as well as radiation and things were in your food. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. Scientists are still in the early days of collecting data on the arsenic content of food. So far, we think the only widely consumed foodstuffs with the potential for long-term health problems due to arsenic content are rice and all rice derivative products such as flours, cakes, crackers, and infant formulas. Oh, my God. Now, I'm going to tell you one thing about rice. Since Fukushima, I have not eaten rice, and I would highly recommend that you pay very close attention to your rice, because your rice will potentially be coming out of places such as the same countries that your teas come out of, Japan, China, India. I don't know if India does rice. But just know, between the Japanese radiation contamination and then China and India with all of their massive pollution problems, you probably don't want to eat anything that comes out of any of those three countries, TPP, hide country of origin. And if you take a look at rice in the store, try to find a spot on the bag that tells you where it came from, because I'll tell you what, it's close to impossible. One of the alternatives to rice that I found is quinoa, or more affectionately called, for those of us who don't know how it's properly pronounced like me, I say it anyway, quinoa. That typically comes out of South America, some of those South American countries, and it is very high protein. It looks very much like a rice. You can get it as little rices, or you could get it as pastas. I also do it as like pasta noodles, and it's very good for you. Also for tea, if you wanted to talk about tea, it's called yerba mate, Y-E-R-B-A, and then the second word is M-A-T-E, and they make tea that's also out of South America, so it's pretty clean, and you can get green teas, ginger teas and whatever made out of yerba mate. I can find that actually at my little local health food store right up the street here. And it's pretty tasty. So anyway, that was just a sidebar. Let's continue with the story about arsenic, though. We're not talking about radiation. Chemical analyses, and I'm going to tell you, if just go hit anynews.com if you want to keep up on what's going on. It's just so horrific that I can't even go there because I think I'll be in tears. Chemical analyses show that regardless of the origin of rice, four arsenic-containing compounds account for about 95% of the arsenic that is released from rice on cooking. You know, it's strange that they are not mentioning apple juice in here at all. And if I'm not mistaken, though, hold on, we're going to sidebar here. Apple seeds arsenic, I think, or is it cyanide? I thought it was arsenic. I thought it was the apple seeds that had arsenic in them. Cyanide, arsenic, and other toxins in fruit. Apple seeds do contain some small amounts of cyanide, but no detectable arsenic. Well, there you go. So get your cyanide seeds here. So do like apricot pits or something like that. But all right, I've now gotten off. Let's get back here. Two of the compounds, together known as inorganic arsenic, are known human carcinogens. And two, monomethyl and dimethylated arsenic, are possibly carcinogenic to humans, according to the International Agency for Research on Cancer. There's a wide range of arsenic concentrations in food. If an in-food safety limit were set based on the concentration level only, it would designate all foods from the aquatic environment to be unfit for human consumption, even though there is no health risk. Well, I would say anything pretty much now out of the ocean should probably be off limits, if for no other reason between, and I know people in the Gulf say they really can't see it, but I'm going to tell you what, I saw some horrifying stories about crustaceans with eyes that have crumbled off, limbs that have crumbled off from the Corexit in the water. There's all kinds of oil layering the bottom of the Gulf that they just discovered again. You know, between the Fukushima radiation and the millions of dead animals everywhere all over the West Coast, I just saw one of the universities was actually doing a serious study now on these bleeding, dying animals all over the place on the West Coast. And it's pretty horrifying. Anyone who says that this isn't being caused by Fukushima and rather global warming, and I do have a story that came out of Australia with the Prime Minister's sidekick coming out saying global warming is just a climate change, that's what he called it, is just a ploy by the international community to bring down international laws. We're going to look at that because that looks pretty damn interesting. But anyone who says that it is not Fukushima that's causing this mass die-off on the West Coast and it's rather climate change has to have a screw loose, because if you've watched it for the last 4 years like we have, there's just no doubt. You know, I'm not going to get on it, but don't eat anything out of the ocean. That would be a pretty safe bet about now. All right, anyway, let's get back here. I'm almost done with this arsenic because this is just a really long, blobulous story that isn't saying much of anything. The result of the analysis from a large number of rice and rice products presented by both Consumer Reports and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, oh yes, that we trust so much, shows that almost all rice tested contain concentrations in excess, sometimes well in excess, of the 50 parts per billion limit. Brown rice has, in general, concentrations of arsenic higher than those in white rice. Oh no, I used to love brown rice too. Why arsenic in rice? Well, I don't know. We do not know how long we have been exposed, wasn't that great, but only relatively recently have advances in chemical measurement technology made it possible to detect arsenic compounds at relevant concentrations in foodstuff. The first results for the measurement of arsenic in rice were made in 1998. The global extent of the contamination was not apparent until 2005. Wow. When it was realized that some of the highest concentrations of both inorganic and methylated arsenic compounds are found in rice grown in the U.S. Well, gee, that's a surprise. What is it, chelating the arsenic out of the soil from some old horrible pesticide that they used? Results so far show that all rice, regardless of variety or origin, contains easily measurable concentrations of rice compound. Why is there arsenic in rice? Rice is often grown in fields formerly used for cotton, whose production involves spraying with cacodylic acid, the dimethyl arsenic compound, to kill boll weevil pests, and then with arsenic acid to kill and desiccate the plant prior to mechanical harvesting. So all you people in Texas who live near all of the cotton fields, Just know that they spray them with arsenic acid. That's pretty insane. Rice also assimilates arsenic to a greater extent than any other crops, such as wheat and barley. Many of the arsenic-containing compounds that we eat or drink also come from processes involving naturally occurring arsenic, which is widely distributed in the Earth's crust. All life forms, ranging from bacteria to primates, are capable of transforming the inorganic or arsenic compounds derived from minerals that get into our food web into a series of organic compounds, rendering them less toxic. Well, all right, this is just a really long story. I want to see what they are using to measure arsenic, and it doesn't really say here. I don't know. I'll drop this into chat. I really don't care about arsenic anymore. I don't eat rice. I would say caution rice anyway. Quinoa. Quinoa is definitely a much better alternative. And if I can get to chat and have it reload. Hey, look at that. Paste. There we go. There's a story out of Discover Magazine. All right. Before I lose my train, let's get back here and take a look at some of the other things I wanted to talk about. I don't know. It's Friday, guys, and it's hot in here. I forgot to turn on the air conditioner. So, and I don't have my shorts. I grabbed sweats, which was probably a bad idea because it's already about 90 degrees in here with all these computers going. There was a story, and I don't know if I'm going to find it. Let's scroll down. We'll scroll. Something actually that came up the other day that we were talking about. We had read a story about a girl when we were talking about some of the poisons in our food, et cetera, and the gut microbes, about a girl who ended up becoming allergic to everything. I'm sure you remember that story. She now has a Benadryl pump that is pumping Benadryl into her 24/7 so she doesn't have these mass allergic reactions to, oh, I don't know, air and, you know, liquids, foods, everything. She was allergic to everything, and they had diagnosed her with this mast cell disease, which is pretty interesting because I had mentioned that I had run across the very same illness back many years ago. I just out of the blue never had allergies and became allergic to everything. I was so sick. I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't digest anything. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. Oh my God, you have cancer, diagnosed 10 different times. And it wasn't. And the only way I was able to fix myself was to get all this crap out of my diet. But in the interim, I had done Benadryl for like 7 years every day. It was the only way that I could get around not being covered from head to toe in hives and having difficulty swallowing, etc. Well, right after we had done that story, a study came out that was very disturbing. Strong link found between dementia and common anticholinergic drugs, one of which happens to be Benadryl. There is a strong and possibly irreversible link between Alzheimer's disease and many commonly used medications for insomnia, allergies, and depression, according to a large recent Journal of American Medicine internal medicine study. Like, how frightening is this? And listen, 3 years of taking either daily Benadryl, Advil PM, Tylenol PM, or Motrin PM, for example, is associated with about a 10 percentage point increase in the probability of experiencing dementia or Alzheimer's compared to those with no use. This association is significant, Dr. Malaz Boutsani told Drug Discovery and Development, an somewhere in one of these studies, I had seen they had listed 5 to 7 years. There was like a 59% increase. So does that mean I'm going to go freaking loopy as I get older? Like, I think I should be suing the makers of fucking Benadryl right now reading this. What the hell's that shit? Shouldn't they have been long-term testing that before they ever put it on the market? You know, your children, they have child's Benadryl. They recommend that you give that to your child for allergic reactions. And isn't the big pharma going to make out huge when millions of Americans who took Benadryl, Advil PM, Tylenol, Motrin PM, or some other type of depression drug, SSRI, ends up with dementia and Alzheimer's? They sure than shit are. Oh my God. Aren't all the companies that are working on the brain project right now going to bank huge when they can get into your brain and cure dementia as part of their precision medicine? Of course they are. Brutsani, director of the Aging Brain Care Program at the Ezinki Health in Indianapolis, Indiana, was not involved in the study. But he has done smaller scale work making similar findings. I mean, shouldn't this shit be pulled off the market? This was the largest study ever and utilized the most rigorous standards ever, he said. Methodologically, this is the best you can get. It doesn't get any better than this. This has established a significant link between anticholinergic drugs and Alzheimer's. Very few other phenomenon have been found to possess such a strong potential link. It is rare, he said. And what pisses me off even more is the fact that the only reason why I needed the Benadryl on a daily basis is because the poisons in my food made me sick. So I couldn't deal with any foods or any external allergens that screwed up my immune system that made me have to take it. Next section, the new study. Many groups have suggested such links, but for the current study, the team of senior author Eric Larson of the University of Washington engaged in longer follow-up over 7 years and utilized a tighter assessment of use. The study followed up some 3,500 group participants, average age of 73, with the Adult Changes in Thought study, which is a group health project funded by the National Institute on Aging. The group showed for the first time a dose response. That is, that Alzheimer's risk may grow with higher use. For instance, it found people taking a minimum of 25 milligrams of an anticholinergic called diphenhydramine, or one Advil PM, Tylenol PM, Motrin PM, or Benadryl pill a day for 3 to 12 months increased their relative risk for dementia by 19%. So that's just daily for 3 months to a year. Daily for 1 to 3 years, you've increased your risk for dementia by 23%. And daily for 3 to 7 years, listen to this, guys, 54% increase compared to no use at all. Furthermore, this was the first study to find that dementia associated with anticholinergics, however you say this, anticholinergics, may not be reversible even years after the drug use stops. Lawsuit. I think I'm going to make my $1 million. I could not even tell you how pissed I was when I saw this study. And I mean, I had to take Benadryl for years to even function. My face is really hot now. I might have to throw a video on and go turn on the air conditioner. Oh, it may not even be reversible even years after drug use stops. The risks, this is quote, the risk for dementia was consistent when comparing participants with recent and past heavy use of such medications with non-users, suggesting that the adverse cognitive effects are permanent. Other studies have consistently shown similar results. Now, I don't really know how Advil PM, Tylenol PM, and Motrin PM work versus Benadryl. They all apparently have this diphenhydramine in them. But I mentioned to you that my old dentist, who was an oral surgeon, the one that I used to go to when I was a kid, we had long discussions one time when I was really sick about this. And he had told me that the one thing about Benadryl you got to be careful of is that, yes, for your allergic symptoms like rhinitis, your swollen nose, for allergies, it does shrink the blood vessels, which then causes an alleviation in your stuffiness. But it also constricts the blood vessels everywhere else in your body, including in your stomach, which is when I was having problems digesting proteins. And he was thinking that that could potentially be causing some sort of issue in being able to pass proper digestive substances between the stomach and the, you know, wherever they're produced in your small intestine. But also, I was thinking about this the other day. Wouldn't a constriction in blood vessels also happen in your brain? And in your brain, wouldn't those blood vessels be carrying red blood cells loaded with oxygen to the brain? Could that be where the future issues with dementia and Alzheimer's comes from? I don't know. It was just a theory I was kind of tossing out there just from my basic study of Benadryl and what I know. But it was just a thought. All right. Alternatives. Do we really want to read about alternatives? Lead author study was director of the Geriatric Pharmacy Program at the University of Washington School of Pharmacy found the link in a wide range of anticholinergics, from tricyclic antidepressants like doxepin, which brand name is Synquan, to the above-mentioned PM products with diphenhydramine, this is like too much for the morning, to first-generation antihistamines like chlorpheniramine, clotrimetin, and Benadryl, and antimuscarinics for bladder control like oxybutynin or diazepam. The team came to the conclusion, for example, that people taking at least 10 milligrams a day of doxepin, 4 milligrams a day of chlorpheniramine, or 5 milligrams a day of oxybutynin for more than 3 years are at greater risk of developing dementia. Gray herself was surprised by the findings. Quote, there was one prior study that examined the study question, but we thought we might not find these medications were related to dementia because we had a better study design and we were able to better adjust for some of the health conditions that might be co-founders through the use of statistical methods, she told Drug Discovery and Development. We know that anticholinergics are related to impaired cognition acutely when people take these medicines. They feel a little groggy, and absolutely, it's the one thing I always hated about Benadryl is that when you wake up from a Benadryl coma, you always feel like you're in a haze for a good couple hours. They're also less attentive, etc. But these are reversible changes. The study suggests that these medicines are also related to dementia and irreversible cognitive changes. Substitutes are available for some of the problems addressed by anticholinergics. Those suffering from depression can take a selective serotonin uptake inhibitor. Oh, so SSRIs are a safer alternative. Come on. Unless, of course, you ingest glyphosate in your food. We've done all kinds of research into that with your cytochrome P450 enzyme suppression. And then you would go loop-de-loo and get a gun and start shooting people. This is unbelievable. Yes. So she says there are better alternatives like SSRIs like clidopram, Celexa, or Prozac. Yeah. I'm not recommending those. Those with allergies can take a second generation antihistamine like Claritin. I got to tell you, Claritin makes me spastic. Behavioral changes can help. Urinary incontinence, yes, like wearing a diaper. Butsani, who is also a professor of medicine at Indiana University, told Drug Discovery and Development that when it comes to insomnia medications, basically any cold medication that makes you sleepy at night contains anti-chlorogenic, so stay away from any drug that makes you sleepy. Guys, this is freaking believable. Any drug that makes you sleepy? How many bazillions of people worldwide take these drugs on a daily basis? I just can't even believe this. Still, if your solution for a sleep problem is a pill, quick fix, do you want that? Well, no. I mean, serotonin, which then makes melatonin, is probably a better idea. We just discovered yesterday, tryptophan. Go cook yourself a turkey. You'll sleep like a baby. And your muscles will feel better in the morning. Actually, tryptophan is one of the 20 or 22 essential amino acids required by the body that the body does not manufacture. I was reading about that yesterday. So it's probably a good thing. And it helps you sleep like a baby. Warm milk, too. That was one thing. I'd make a hot chocolate with warm milk if I couldn't sleep years ago, and that worked well as well. But if your solution for a sleep problem is a pill, quick fix, do you really want that? Any drug taken for a long time could come with problems. I tell people, if they have to take any such drug for more than 30 days, they should think about alternatives. Maybe you should just take it easy. Maybe you should adopt grandma's remedy of hot milk. Oh, here he goes. Hot tea and rest. Physical fitness is always good. Yes, exercise for 10 minutes will even help you sleep. Mindfulness, reflection, physical fitness, and tea. Yeah, but how about the drug pushers that put all this shit out there and let people take this stuff for an entire generation, and now they're going, whoopsie, we made a mistake. We are now going to have bazillions of aging adults that are going to end up with dementia and Alzheimer's. And oh my God, and we already seen a huge increase of this new cash cow. This is just disgusting. The cause of this potential link is unknown. Anticholinergics can block the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. But there are many hypotheses as to why anticholinergics can lead to Alzheimer's, Butsani told Drug Discovery and Development. The current medication for Alzheimer's, Aricept, does the opposite of what Benadryl does, for example. We think that same pathway is involved. So anticholinergics may reduce the function of acetyl receptors and may end up killing the brain cells. Well, that's nice. I actually just read a study not too long ago about them using sound waves, and maybe we'll look that up, as a potential cure for Alzheimer's. And I don't remember exactly how it worked. So let's finish this story first, though. Gray told Drug and Discovery Development, that happens to be this website that I'm reading. It's dddmag.com, drugdiscoverydevelopment.com, dddmag.com. Gray told Drug Discovery and Development, she agreed that, quote, we do not yet know the mechanism by which anticholinergics may increase the risk for dementia. It is possible that long-term use of these medications leads to changes in the brain similar to those seen with Alzheimer's disease, such as neuritic plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. In animal models, procedures that block transmission through these kinds of pathways increase the concentration of beta amyloids. Yes, those are the beta amyloid plaques, a main ingredient in the plaques found in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's. Nothing is likely to be fully nailed down anytime soon, as it would be unethical to do a gold standard clinical trial. Well, how about all the millions of people who've already taken it? You know, one of the things that they should be doing right now is on every box of that stuff that's out there, putting a big, huge red warning label that any use of the substance for more than 30 days can have adverse side effects on your brain. I can't even believe. So they got like these ironclad studies, but the shit's still out there. And I don't see any huge headlines. Are you? Where did I end up? Here we go. Nothing is likely to be fully nailed down anytime soon, as it would be unethical to do a gold standard clinical trial. Clinical trials can be done to prove benefits, but to prove a deficit, yes, would mean lawsuits, would mean doctors would have to assign patients to, say, Advil PM every night for 3 years to assess the damage. But the thing is that there are people out there who've already done this. The recent trial also did not factor in two other classes of common drugs tapped by the American Geriatric Society as associated with cognitive problems. That is benzodiazepines. Benzodiazepines recently found to hamper rodent neurogenesis and histamine receptor antagonists. But even given these limitations, this trial, with its 7 years of data, was very, very good, Bustani said. Via computerized dispensing, doses and uses were well established. Yeah, let's put Watson on it, since Watson is doing all the black label testing on drugs that weren't used for other things. Let's see what Watson says, Mr. AI Dr. Computer. Via computerized dispensing, doses and uses were well established. Potential confounding variables like people taking anti-chlorogenics for depression or insomnia precisely because they were in the grips of an undiagnosed dementia already were weeded out. Bustani's crew is working on a mobile application to help people figure out what drugs to avoid. Phew, that'll save us. In the meantime, he directs clinicians and patients to a chart by the Aging Brain Care website that lists drugs containing anti-chlorogenics. Gray's group is in the process of, quote, examining whether these medications are related to changes in the brain of a subsample of the study cohort that has been autopsied after death. Well, great. So what, we're going to wait until these people kick the bucket and then autopsy the brains to see whether or not Benadryl screwed them up? We will be examining whether those who used anti-chlorogenics had higher plaques, tangles, and other markers of cerebrovascular disease than those who did not use these medications. This should be beyond alarming. These are over-the-counter drugs that people pop like candy without any type of warning that there are long-term side effects that will totally screw you up. And there is a massive list here, by the way, of all the drugs out there, including Tagamet, by the way, I see on the list, that include these substances. I will get Dramamine. Holy shit, Unisom. I will guarantee you that 90% of Americans have probably at least taken one of these drugs once. And who knows how many of these drugs people take on a daily basis. This is unbelievable. I'm going to drop the PDF. SLC actually dropped me this after reading that story the other day. Here. There is, oh, there you are, SLC. Good morning. There is the PDF with all the drugs. This is just unbelievable. And here is the study. Man, I got too many tabs open. I can't even believe this. So I'm going to end up with dementia. Thanks a lot. All right, let me do a quick search here for Alzheimer's, if I can even spell it. A-L-T-Z. Oh, ALZH. There we go. ALZH. All time. EIMERS. Sound waves. There we go. This was in Science Alert, March 18th. Yeah, problem reaction solution. New Alzheimer's treatment fully restores memory function. I think it was like an ultrasound. Of mice that received the treatment, 75% got their memory function back. Maybe this is the pharmaceutical company covering their asses. Australian researchers have come up with a non-invasive ultrasound technology that clears the brain of neurotoxic amyloid plaques, structures that are responsible for memory loss and a decline of cognitive function in Alzheimer's patients. Well, looky, looky. If a person has Alzheimer's disease, it is usually the result of a buildup of two types of lesions, amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. Amyloid plaques sit between the neurons and end up as dense clusters of beta amyloid molecules, a sticky type of protein that clumps together and forms plaques. Neurofibrillary tangles are found inside the neurons of the brain, and they are caused by defective tau, or probably said as DAU, TAU proteins, that clump up into a thick, insoluble mass. This causes tiny filaments called microtubules to get all twisted, which disrupts the transportation of essential materials such as nutrients and organelles along them, just like when you twist up a vacuum cleaner tube. As we don't have any type of vaccine, phew! Or preventative measures for Alzheimer's, except we just found out don't take anything like Benadryl, Tylenol PM, or any of the other drugs that include that substance that I can't pronounce properly. A disease that affects 343,000 people in Australia and 50 million people worldwide. Well, it's a wonder now. It's been a race to figure out how best to treat it. How about pull those drugs off the market? Starting with how to clear the buildup of defective beta amyloid and tau proteins from a patient's brain. Now, a team from the Queensland Brain Institute, ding, 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 part of the Brain Project at the University of Queensland, have come up with a pretty promising solution to remove the former. Publishing in the Science Translational Medicine, the team describes the technique as using a particular type of ultrasound called focused therapeutic ultrasound, which non-invasively beams sound waves into the brain tissue. Which, I don't know, I might be a little nervous about that, but I guess we'll see. We'll let some of the other 50 million people worldwide get this treatment first before I line up. By oscillating super fast, these sound waves are able to gently open up the blood-brain barrier, which, again, that's kind of a scary thought, which is a layer that protects the brain against bacteria and stimulates the brain's microglial cells to activate. Microglial cells are basically the waste removal cells, so they're able to clear out the toxic beta amyloid clumps that are responsible for the worst symptoms of Alzheimer's. And I remember the day we did the story because we had talked about some of the smart dust, and there were some pretty freaky stories about being able to control some of these nano particulates that we were reading about with these ultrasound sound waves. Remember that? And when we read the story, one of the shocking things was that it opened up that blood-brain barrier, which of course will let in all of the things that the blood-brain barrier were prevented to keep out. I guess we'll have to keep an eye on anyone getting this type of treatment and see what happens after the fact. It sounds a little bit scary to me. The team reports fully restoring the memory functions of 75% of the mice they tested it on with, so they say, zero damage to the surrounding brain tissue. They found that the treated mice displayed improved performance in three memory tasks: a maze, a test to get them to recognize new objects, and one to get them to remember places they should avoid. Quote, we are extremely excited by this innovation of treating Alzheimer's without using drugs. One of the team, Jürgen Gott, said in a press release, the word breakthrough is often misused, but in this case, I think this really does fundamentally change our understanding of how to treat this disease, and I foresee a great future for this approach. The team says they're planning on starting trials with higher animal models, such as sheep, ding ding, and hope to get their human trials underway in 2017. And at the bottom of this article, there is actually a radio interview. I'm going to drop this into chat as well. That was out of sciencealert.com. After the show, I will build all my references in the description of the YouTube video. So anyone who's listening to this later can actually get to those. So what do you think of them apples? I don't know. It's kind of disturbing to me. I can't even believe that all of these common drugs that are out there. I mean, doesn't that sound like a lawsuit? How did these get out there for people to be taking for 20, 30 years? I know Benadryl's been out there forever. And it even said that there had been studies in the past, but oh no, we thought they were wrong. But shouldn't there have been a black box warning or something? All right, something to wrap the show up with. This one was kind of an oddball-y one, but the picture caught my attention as I was scrolling through my news feed. And then, of course, so did the title. This is out of IO9. There's a girl with her eyes closed with this thing on her head looking like she's out of a Star Trek episode. And it says, this migraine-preventing space tiara was just approved by, yes, ding, 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 the FDA. Wonder if it uses ultrasound. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. Fantastic news for people who suffer regularly from migraine headaches. The FDA has just approved, and I'd love to see what kind of studies they did on this before their approval, their half-assed approval of stuff, it seems. Hold on. You know what I'm going to do, too? Before I get too far into the story, let me connect me because I see there is a video. Ring a ding a ding. Ding 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 ding. Here it comes. I have answered. All right, fantastic news for people who suffer regularly from migraine headaches. Yes. The FDA has just approved a wearable electrical stimulation device for sale in the United States, a headband that prevents the onset of migraines when worn for just 20 minutes a day. Let's see if we can play this. I'm not quite sure how long this is. Oh, about 2 minutes.
Understanding of the pathophysiology of migraine headache has made significant progress. Current theories place the origin of the migraine within the brain. The cortex of susceptible people is hyperexcitable. Cortical activity activates the nociceptors of the trigeminal nerves in the meninges. Pain signals from the meninges or nociceptors travel along the upper branch of the trigeminal nerves and are relayed in the brainstem to the brain, resulting in a perception of headache pain. Activation of the trigeminal vascular system and secretion of neuropeptides are hypothesized to be central events in the pathogenesis of migraine. Tactile sensitivity competes with nociceptive signals. Tactile sensitive signals traveling along the upper branch of the trigeminal nerve counteract pain signals from the meninges or nociceptors. Cephaly neurostimulation is active on the upper branch of the trigeminal nerve.
And this guy might as well be speaking another language. Holy shit. I figured this would have been, first of all, it started with like porn music. But second of all, I mean, I thought he would have done it in like some plain language so everyone understands. So screw this. Let's just read the story. What I just saw in here is that, you know, my we were talking about TENS units in chat the other day for pain relief. And one of my friends was saying, oh, I wonder if it works on the head. And I was seeing everywhere, don't put it on your head. Well, this says right here, the headband then delivers a transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation TENS to the trigeminal nerve known to be involved in the migraine headache. It's basically a TENS unit for the head. It seriously looks like something out of Star Trek. It says the device is definitely long overdue. Some 10% of people worldwide suffer from migraines, a condition characterized by intense pulsing or throbbing pain in one area of the head, accompanied by nausea or vomiting or sensitivity to light and sound. Developed by STX Med in Belgium, Cephaly, that's the name of it, is a compact, portable, battery-powered prescription device. It is placed at the center of the forehead, just above the eyes, using a self-adhesive electrode. And the headband then delivers transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, TENS, to the trigeminal nerve known to be involved in migraine headaches. The only known noticeable effect is a tingling or massaging sensation where the electrode is applied. It looks right about where your pineal is, by the way. It can only be used by people aged 18 or older and should be used no more than once per day for 20 minutes. A recent study showed that people who use Cephaly experience significantly fewer days with migraines each month. They also rely on less medication. It is not effective in completely eliminating migraines, but 54% of patients were satisfied enough that they'd be willing to purchase the device. Here we go. I will post this one. There you go. That's the Space Tiara. Oh, my God. This is crazy. All right, guys. Well, guess what? It's Friday. I hope it's nice where you are this weekend. It's supposed to be absolutely beautiful here this weekend. I am hoping to actually do a little bit of tree therapy, get out into some nature, maybe on the ATV, maybe do a little bit of fishing. It would be wonderful. Make sure you guys stick around because it is Friday night. Josh is live tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. We have Primer Time at 8 this week's show. Truth on the Tracks with Brandon. It was a great show this week. United Front Radio with Dianella and Kyle at 10. And Anti-Media Radio at 11. Live with Levon. Awesome shows all weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I'll be in and out. I'll poke in when I get some time. So anyway, guys, I will catch up with you on Monday. Everyone, take care. And here comes the music. Have an awesome Friday. If it even starts. There we go. All right, guys. Have a beer if you can. Crack them if you have them.